Good morning. I'm Paul Seavey on behalf of the Colorado Mining Association. I would like to reserve 5 minutes, please, for rebuttal.
Okay, I'll try and let you know when you have 5 minutes left.
Thank you. This case presents one critical question of law. Does legislative review of rules adopted by the Air Quality Control Commission moot judicial review of that ordinance? The answer is no, for two reasons. Because House Bill 1291 did not expressly or even impliedly repeal or otherwise limit the district court's jurisdiction to hear the Mining Association's appeal of the Air Quality Control Commission's final agency action. Second, HB 1291 does not moot judicial review of the AQCC's rulemaking, because judicial review will continue to have a practical and legal effect on whether the state implementation plan rules remain legally enforceable. The district court, therefore, erred as a matter of law in finding that 1291 was a subsequent event that rendered judicial review of the Air Commission's rules to be moot. The court's review here is de novo, and that's undisputed, and the district court's order should be reversed and remanded for immediate consideration, as the case has fully been briefed in the court below on the merits of the CMA appeal of the AQCC rulemaking. The General Assembly's review action does not revoke the district court's authority to review the Air Commission's rulemaking. Only a Colorado district court can review and determine whether the commission's rulemaking was conducted in accordance with a myriad of applicable Colorado law. The Colorado Constitution grants the district court's appellate jurisdiction as, quote, may be prescribed by law, Article 6, Section 9. And the APA, Colorado Administrative Procedure Act, vests the district court's expressly with jurisdiction to review final agency actions.
Mr. Seavey, let me interrupt you and just ask you to tell us what, in your view, is the role of both the Legislative Council and the General Assembly in improving the regulations that are at issue here?
The legislative review statute, Judge, is the purpose of it is for the legislature to decide whether or not rules adopted by the Air Quality Control Commission that were adopted with the understanding and intent to be forwarded to EPA for consideration and inclusion under the Federal Clean Air Act process for a state implementation plan, that legislative council process that you refer to in the General Assembly's consideration of it is for the purpose of deciding whether to allow those rules to expire or to be forwarded on to the EPA for the Federal Clean Air Act process to begin.
Council, and in this case, the Committee on Legislative Council specifically held a hearing and took up the question of, you know, did the AQCC act properly and in accordance with state and federal laws in incorporating the PSCO emission reduction plan into the SIP. Given that they undertook to make that inquiry, are you effectively telling this court that that inquiry is meaningless?
It's not meaningless, and it was what it is. It was a hearing on issues and considerations that the interested public might have comments on. And the fact that they took comments on that included people expressing concerns or questions about legal issues doesn't act as a functional equivalent of a district court that is vested by the state constitution and by the Administrative Procedure Act with judicial review.
And what is your position on whether the Committee on Legislative Council, whether its determination and its review is the functional equivalent of the General Assembly acting?
It may be. And even if it were, that role is merely as a decider whether or not those agency rules are forwarded on to EPA under the Federal Clean Air Act process. It's nothing more. It's not a substantive approval of the content of those rules. If you look at HB 1291, it expresses nothing as to the merits of legal considerations or otherwise. And you put that in the context of the fact that the district court's jurisdiction is applies under the APA, and that our Supreme Court has said for it to be otherwise, the legislature has to expressly say the jurisdiction is limited. Or, in this instance, that it doesn't have jurisdiction to review under the legislative review process once the legislature speaks. And further, I'm sorry, Judge.
Go ahead.
And further, looking at the plain language of 1291 and the legislative intent section, it says very clearly that the purpose of that action was to review and approve the submittal of those rules to EPA for EPA review and approval to make them federally enforceable. And that only happens, the federal enforceability only happens once the EPA acts. And so these rules were not approved as to substance or content. There is no finding in 1291 as to any of those legal issues that commenters raised, much less articulating or finding that the legislature absolved any concerns as to the legality of the AKCC's rules.
Now, your clients were attempting to invoke the district court's jurisdiction, I presume, under the State Administrative Procedure, is that correct?
Yes, absolutely. And also, Judge, the Colorado Air Quality Control Act, which contains a right of review of the Air Commission's rules, consistent with the APA.
And as to the APA, I mean, that allows for review of final agency action, but here aren't we effectively, or isn't the district court effectively being now asked to look at final action of a legislative body?
Well, the challenge, the CMA complaint challenges the adoption of the rules, and that occurred prior to the legislature's action. Now that the legislature had acted, the district court construed that as a subsequent event that mooted out our case. And our appeal is that the district court erred in determining that legislative action serves to moot the case. It does not, because practical legal effect can occur if the district court reviews the merits of CMA's case. And the practical legal effect is articulated by our 10th Circuit, the 7th Circuit, and the 5th Circuit, which have all uniformly held that EPA's consideration and approval of state rules submitted as the amendments to the State Implementation Act, EPA does not look at compliance with state law. They look at elements of the Federal Clean Air Act. If they do not regard any concerns with regard to state law, that's the Lumen case, most recently in the 5th Circuit.
So, counsel, from a procedural history standpoint, I'm sort of following up on where my colleagues' questions are. What we have is a legislative process versus a rulemaking process and the role of the legislative branch versus the judicial branch. And in this case, procedurally, from a historical standpoint, the legislative council, which is made up of both parties, is bipartisan, is 17 members. I take the case up. They appear to address the concerns that you're raising today. Unanimously 17-0 approve it. Send it on to both bodies of the legislature, which also can approve it, and it goes on to the governor, who approves it. Why shouldn't the judicial branch be satisfied that the review process has taken place in this case, so that this legislation can sit as having been approved by the legislature and the governor?
Several reasons, Judge Ramon. The first is that it's not the functional equivalent. The legislative process that you articulated does not serve or fill the role of judicial review that's reserved by our state constitution to the judicial branch of government, which serves as a check and balance on the other branches. That's number one. Number two, the nature of that process was not a searching judicial review process such as that a district court owes to a final agency action. And considering the process is different, there's no pleadings, there's a public comment, there's review and all those things, but it's not the substantive consideration of positions or doing what I'm doing today, and that is appearing before a court and arguing the merits of those pleadings. So it doesn't satisfy that. And then lastly, of course, none of that was for the purpose of legislative approval of the substance. And how do I know that? It's because one just merely needs to look at the plain language of what the legislature did, and that's 1291. And the legislative articulation of its intent does not speak in any fashion to approval of the substance. It says we're approving it to go on to EPA.
But doesn't the
transmittal EPA, of authorization.
But doesn't the EPA then have to engage in a close and thorough review of the substance, and wouldn't your clients have an opportunity to lodge any substantive complaints with the EPA?
And that's the Lumina case, Judge. Fifth Circuit decided last year, raised to the district court that says EPA does not look at nor may it concern itself with issues of state law. It is only looking at whether the state's action is approvable under the Federal Clean Air Act. And the Clean Air Act case law, since the act was adopted in 1977, is clear. And Lumen also says EPA's duty and action approving SIPs is effectively ministerial. They do not look at the state law issues that CMA has raised.
Excuse me, Mr. Sabe, you have just under 5 minutes.
If I may, Judge, reserve the balance of my time for rebuttal.
Sure, that's fine.
Thank you.
Good morning, and may it please the court. I'm Assistant Solicitor General Erin Overturf, counsel for the state defendants. My attorney registration number is 40187. This court should affirm the district court's order because by passing House Bill 1291, the General Assembly reviewed and approved challenged administrative actions rendering CMA's judicial review claims moot. At its heart, this case is about the legal significance of House Bill 1291. And more broadly, the legislative SIP review process contained in 25-7-133, by which House Bill 1291 was adopted. However, before delving into an analysis of House Bill 1291, it's also important to note what this case is not about. And this case is not about whether the district court had subject matter jurisdiction over CMA's judicial review action. All parties agree the district court had subject matter jurisdiction. And the district court specifically stated it was declining to exercise the jurisdiction it understood it possessed. As discussed in the joint answer brief, subject matter jurisdiction and mootness are distinct legal concepts. Subject matter jurisdiction concerns the authority vested in the court by the sovereign, and in contrast, mootness exists where a court is called upon to decide a case over which it enjoys jurisdiction, but where such a decision would have no practical effect on an existing legal controversy.
Counsel, what's the authority, the specific authority of the Legislative Council to examine the AQCC's procedures for compliance?
The SIP review statute by which the Legislative Council undertakes that review is 25-7-133.
But what is its specific authority, where is it enumerated that says it can take effectively judicial review in reviewing for procedural irregularities, if you will, at the rulemaking stage?
And the state wouldn't argue that what the legislative body did here was effectively judicial review. It's not the same as what a court would do if it was undertaking EPA review, but rather the authority that the Legislative Council and the legislature has is really its intrinsic legislative authority. When the AQCC adopted these rules, it was acting in a quasi-legislative capacity. And the state would argue that the legislature always has the option of passing, of overriding things that an administrative body would do. In this case, for instance, the legislature surely could have, if it wanted to, write the entirety of the SIP itself and pass that along to EPA. However, it's chosen to typically vest that authority with the Air Commission, but it has reserved for itself an opportunity to look over the shoulder of the AQCC before those rules are finalized, if you will.
Ms. Overturf, what authority, if any, does the Legislative Council have in this area?
The Legislative Council's action is not what the state would argue moots the underlying judicial review action, to be clear. The state would argue that it's the passive of the legislative act itself, of House Bill 1291, so the action of the General Assembly that has effectively mooted the claim here.
So what is your response to the cases that were cited by your opponents that I don't believe you addressed in your brief, the Sierra Club case and the New Mexico case, which said that a state court could independently review a state SIP regardless of EPA approval?
Sure, and the state's of the position that the content of whatever EPA does, let's assume that that's correct, that EPA, when it reviews the SIP, does not look at issues of compliance with state law. That's something that the state's willing to agree to here today. But that doesn't help the court understand what it is that 1291 itself did. And so the impact on what EPA does is only relevant if this court finds that House Bill 1291 did not act as an approval of the rules themselves.
But I'm having trouble understanding your argument, Ms. Overturk, because as I understand it, CMA is contending that there were certain APA violations, that, for example, that there was an inadequate notice period. And let's assume, and I don't know, have any idea whether that argument is valid or not, but if it were valid, wouldn't that affect the ultimate validity of the EPA rules that were approved by the General Assembly?
It wouldn't, Your Honor, because by passing House Bill 1291, the General Assembly has essentially codified the requirements contained in those rules as a matter of state law. So regardless of whether the notice was deficient, Public Service Company, for instance, would still be required to tear down certain power plants and to build certain other power plants. The requirements of the rules themselves remain in force and effect regardless of what happens to the AQCC rules.
Are you suggesting then that that the legislature could approve a situation, an amended SIP plan where there were like 3 days of notice and comment rulemaking for, and there was no opportunity to challenge that in state court?
It could, Your Honor, because the legislative, when the AQC is taking these actions, it's acting in a quasi-legislative capacity. And so if the General Assembly wishes to step in and approve the action that the Air Commission has undertaken, it had the authority to do that under its legislative authority. So in that situation, it's not as though CMA is being deprived of due process. Rather, it has a separate process, which is the legislative process that it can participate in and advocate its position in front of the General Assembly. In addition, CMA could have taken steps to preserve its time-sensitive claims, but it did not take any of those steps here.
How could CMA or any other entity or individual assert a procedural claim before the General Assembly?
For instance, CMA could have, and I'm not CMA's attorney, obviously, but CMA could have sought an injunction, in this case, prohibiting the General Assembly from enacting 1291. It also could lodge a challenge to 1291 itself.
Well, I know you mentioned that in your brief, that it could have sought an injunction. Is there any other situation that you're aware of where somebody has sought an injunction against the General Assembly to prevent it from enacting legislation?
I'm not, and in part, Your Honor, it's because this judicial, or this review, this legislative review of commission actions is very unique.
That seems to be the case. I would agree with you about that. But it's hard for me to imagine that anybody could seek an injunction against the General Assembly to prevent it or enjoin it from enacting legislation.
And I think that would be the case that CMA would need to make. I think maybe perhaps the best way to think about this in terms of the action that the General Assembly takes and what its import is to think about the inverse of the situation that we have here today. So let's say that the General Assembly adopted a bill that deleted the entirety of the SIP rules. What would the impact of that action be? Now, according to CMA's reasoning, the rules would be, they would not be submitted to EPA for official incorporation into Colorado SIP, but they would continue to be in effect as Air Commission rules because the General Assembly's action is of no real consequence under state law. Now, the state believes that this interpretation of what the General Assembly is doing when it reviews SIP rules is absurd. Administrative bodies, like the Air Commission, have only those powers that are expressly delegated to them by the legislative branch. And in a sense, the Air Commission is acting as a subsidiary of the General Assembly when it conducts a rulemaking. Its actions may always be reviewed, overturned, or amended by an act of the General Assembly, and they can also be approved, which is exactly what happened here today.
Counsel, what's your client's position vis-a-vis this Committee on Legislative Council? Is that committee effectively acting for the General Assembly? Is that committee an extension of the commission, of their quality commission? What is this animal, and how much weight do its actions carry?
I think in this process, the Legislative Council really acts as a gatekeeper to the legislative review of the SIP. So the way that a legislator can decide that they want to avail themselves of the opportunity to review the substantive rules that have been approved by the Air Commission is by alerting the Legislative Council. And the Legislative Council then commences with a hearing. That, as a process, out of that hearing, the Legislative Council can recommend the introduction of a bill that would either modify, delete, or approve the rules. That bill then goes through the typical legislative process.
And how much of the information that comes before this Legislative Council is available to the General Assembly? It seems to me that a lot of materials were submitted to the Council. Does that carry over, and is it available to the General Assembly for its review?
My understanding is that it is, Your Honor. The SIP review statute itself specifically states that it requests a summary of the rules that's provided in non-technical and accessible language. So that summary is available. Of course, if any legislator or any member of that review committee wishes to review the entirety of the meat of the SIP itself, it can always do that. I would like to touch on an argument raised by CMA's counsel this morning that this case will have a practical legal effect because it will, impact EPA's review procedure. Now, this, as I stated before, is premised on the assumption that House Bill 1291 does not moot its appeal. If this court finds that the district court erred and that 1291 does not move the action, then there's no controversy that an eventual decision in CMA's favor could have an impact on whether the SIP rules are federally enforceable. All of the parties agree on that. However, that determination is not relevant to figuring out what the import of House Bill 1291 is. And that's the only question that's before you here today. The district court didn't misunderstand the impact of federal review as CMA asserts in its brief. Rather, the district court did not discuss or rely upon EPA's review in making its decision about the legal import of 1291. I'd like to talk briefly about the statutory review procedure that's set forth in the statute. It provides the General Assembly with an opportunity to review and either amend, delete, or approve the rules that have been approved by the Air Commission. If the General Assembly chooses not to act, those rules will nonetheless be submitted to EPA. So this idea that action by the General Assembly is undertaken solely for the purpose of transmitting those rules from the state to EPA for its consideration is without merit, because under the SIP review statute, those rules will be transmitted to EPA whether or not the General Assembly acts. And finally, I would like to address a comment made by Mr. Seeby concerning the plain language of House Bill 1291. CMA referred a number of times that the plain language of 1291 states that the rules were only being submitted to, were being approved for the sole purpose of submitting those rules on to the Environmental Protection Agency. However, that language is contained only in the legislative declaration of the statute and not in the statute itself. The General Assembly has codified rules by which it wants courts to review its enactments. And in 242031, it has stated that courts are only to consider the legislative declaration if the statutory language itself is ambiguous. And here, the language of the statute, rather than the legislative declaration, is absolutely unambiguous. It states that these revisions to the SIP have been approved. There's no limitation or modification that's placed on that approval. They're simply approved. And when you look at the statute where House Bill 1291 was codified, you'll see that the General Assembly has listed all of the times when it has availed itself of its right to look over the AQCC's shoulder and review the SIP rules before they go into effect, and has specifically taken actions to approve those rules.
So do we have any evidence in the record that the Legislative Council specifically addressed the APA concerns that the CMA is raising?
There's evidence in the, if you look at the report of the Legislative Council's hearing, you'll see that the Legislative Council took testimony on the issues of essentially all of the same issues that CMA raises in its complaint here. And that includes the APA claims concerning the sufficiency of the notice.
So, but my question was, do we have any evidence that the Legislative Council address those concerns?
The only evidence that would be in the record, Your Honor, is that the Legislative Council did say that it was undertaking its review for the purpose of determining whether, and forgive me, I'm not quoting this exactly, but determining whether the air commissioner's rules were in compliance with state and federal law. That would be as close as the Legislative Council got. However, I would just like to point out that the purpose, the legislature does not need to undertake sort of a proxy judicial review in order for this case to be moot. It merely needs to take some action that removes the practical effect of CMA's judicial review action. And that's what's happened here today. If this case is found in CMA's favor, that will have no practical legal effect because the requirements of those rules will still be in effect as a matter of state law under House Bill 1291.
I was about to ask you that. So say that again. If we were to reverse for purposes of this discussion, what's the practical effect? And I think you just addressed that, but would you say that again?
I believe there is no practical effect, Your Honor. And the only practical effect that CMA has been able to identify is that it may have some impact on EPA's approval of the SIP rules. However, it's important to remember that because the General Assembly reviewed these rules and approved them and codified them in statute, that each of the substantive requirements of those rules, installing certain emission control technology on certain plants, retiring certain other plants, those requirements will still need to be done by the regulated entities because that's still required of them under state law and under other also existing other administrative processes that were involved in the Clean Air, Clean Jobs Act.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Paul Seavey again on behalf of the Colorado Mining Association. The district court fundamentally confused legislative review of the SIP rules at issue to mean that the SIP rules were substantively approved by the General Assembly and therefore the content of the rulemaking was approved as well. And that is not so. House Bill 1291 only authorized the submission of the SIP rules to EPA so that the SIP rules could be considered in the course of a subsequent federal agency rulemaking, and that is the only way under the Clean Air Act as described in our briefs that a SIP rule can be adopted and become federally enforceable under the Federal Clean Air Act.
Mr. Seavey, let me ask you this. Apparently some of the same or all of the same procedural concerns that CMA was raising in its APA lawsuit and the underlying lawsuit here were raised before the Legislative Council. Is that correct?
There were people commenting at the Legislative Council's hearing that I think touched on some of the, there was some commonality in terms of general topical consideration to the claims in our complaint to the district court. Yes, Jeff.
Well, what I would like you to address is why was there such testimony presented or to restate it, could the Legislative Council have addressed the APA arguments raised by CMA?
There's no findings in the legislation that is the case, and 1291 contains nothing to that effect.
No, I'm asking further, you if the Legislative Council could have addressed those APA concerns.
No, I don't think that I would ever argue to this court that the Legislative Council can serve as a proxy to the to a judicial officer of the state of Colorado. And furthermore, looking at what the Legislative Council did in holding that process that the state is claiming, they touched it and therefore it's insulated from judicial review, which we do not agree with at all, that the product of the Legislative Council public hearing, if you will, was merely to develop a 10-page report summarizing all of the SIP rules adopted by the Air Commission over the past year. And if you look at that, because it's in the record, it only contains a few paragraphs devoted to the issues that we're raising in our complaint in the district court. A few paragraphs. That's not a fine, no findings. There's no searching legal or judicial assessment or consideration. A district court's opinion in below dismissing a finding moot was far more lengthy than the Legislative Council's consideration, so it cannot serve as the functional equivalent.
So Mr. Seavey, Ms. Overton says that there's no practical effect if we were to reverse. Could you address that, please?
Absolutely, and thank you. The district court correctly stated that even if the court were to enter an order invalidating the air commission's rules, the actual changes to the SIP would remain in force and effect due to the subsequent approval by the legislature. And that's wrong, as indicated in our briefs, because the practical effect is articulated by the Seventh Circuit in the Sierra Club case and the Tenth Circuit in the New Mexico Environmental Improvement Division case versus EPA, where both courts found that after the state submitted rules to EPA and EPA approved them as part of the SIP, that when a subsequent state court defect, or state court, pardon me, a subsequent state law defect was found by a state court, those SIP rules were found to have no effect. The federal enforceability goes away because the rules are defective, even after EPA approves them. That is the law of this circuit, and it's the law of the Seventh Circuit. And in terms of practical effect on CMA's members, the reason CMA participated in the rulemaking and the reason why CMA filed its challenge of the rulemaking based upon the flawed process and substantive aspects of the rulemaking is because CMA's members are directly harmed by the loss of supplying coal as fuel to electric power generation stations in Colorado that were the subject of the fuel switching mandate by the Public Utility Commission and endorsed by the Air Quality Control Commission. So there we have standing, and that's clearly articulated in the record, and the harm to CMA's members is immediate and clear in the record, and therefore the judicial action reversing the Air Commission's rules would have an immediate and approximate effect of reversing that harm. So it's practical and it's directly legal in the context of standing and immediately traceable back to CMA's members.
Thank you.
And your time is up, Mr. Sabian.
Thank you.
Thank you again, Mr. Sabian and Ms. Overturf. We appreciate your excellent arguments this morning. The case will stand submitted, and a written opinion will issue in due course.